Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I am your host, Em, from The Lipstick Fever, and today I am here with a very special guest. I'm super excited to have Maria Hatzisafanis on the podcast. She is a London-based entrepreneur, author, TV personality, and podcaster, known in the industry as not only an advocate for entrepreneurs, but also a very much so high-in-demand speaker at conferences, where she motivates, inspires, and encourages new entrepreneurs in their business ventures. She is a patron to the British Fashion Council and on the panel for the BFC Vogue Fashion Fund. Maria is also the founder of two global beauty brands, Rodial and Nip and Fab, which are sold through 20,000 doors across 35 countries worldwide, including Saks Fifth Avenue, Space NK, Harvey Nichols, and Harrods. Today, the cutting-edge products are available in the most prestigious stores around the world, with high-profile celebrities such as Kylie Jenner and Sofia Richie fronting the brand's campaigns. Maria, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Emily. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Me too. And we are at your lovely HQ. Your office is amazing. We're in Chelsea, Kensington. Chelsea?
Yes. Yes, we are. Yeah.
It's fabulous. Okay, cool. Well, I'm so excited to have you on today. We're going to jump right into it. Just have a few like fun icebreaker questions for you. So first one being, what is your favorite destination for a proper holiday?
So we have this family tradition. I have two boys. I have two teenagers. And with my husband and the boys, every year we go to a new Asian country. We love Asia. We love the food. And we pick a new country so we can go and experience it as a family. Last year, we went to Vietnam, and it was amazing. This year, we did Cambodia, and we're thinking what to do next year. But I love Asia, and I love discovering the culture, the food. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, I love that. That's on my list next for my husband and I. We need to target Asia. We've done a lot of European travel. So good to know. Okay, second, what is your favorite London coffee shop? Do you have a favorite London coffee shop?
Yeah, so it's going to be the Harvey Nichols Fifth Floor. And I find when I have a crazy busy day at the office and I feel my energy is down, I go to the fifth floor. It's actually a champagne bar as well. And I sit down. It's a high vibe environment. It has jazz music. So I'll order cappuccino, maybe a glass of champagne as well.
Yes.
And raise my vibe. And then I go and see my team downstairs at Harvey Nichols. So it's, yeah, Harvey Nichols Fifth Floor Champagne Bar.
Okay, that is like, I feel like a best kept secret. I'm going to be checking that out. Okay, what is your go-to in London when you need like a little beauty pick-me-up?
Good hair for me is everything. And I'm actually quite lucky because I have this salon, Josh Wood, which is literally 2 minutes from my place. So I would go for a quick blow dry and that makes me feel like $1 million.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Hair is pretty much the thing.
It's the thing.
Yeah. Totally. Okay, perfect. So we'll kind of talk about your background and the cities that you've lived in. You are similar to me in that you spent a lot of time in New York and London. So talking about New York first, when was your kind of first official trip to New York City and what was it for?
Yeah. So my current husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, he's also Greek, and we started dating back in Greece. He moved to New York to study, and we had this sort of long, what do you call this? When you're in different places.
Long distance relationship.
And then I said, you know, I just need to go and check him out and see where he is. So I went to New York to visit him and I fell in love with New York and I said, oh my God, I need to find a way to get here.
Okay, perfect. What was that time like for you in your life? Like, and how long did you spend in New York from there?
Yeah. So just going back to where everything started, I was always passionate about beauty and fashion. And my first job back in Greece was a beauty writer for 17 magazine. I did that for a little bit, but I also had the passion for business. And having seen New York and knowing that New York is kind of the mecca for business studies, I somehow find a way to get me to New York and study business. And I spent there a couple of years. And then got a job in banking. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, but banking was the thing. Started in New York and then moved to London with work. So that's been my path. So I lived in New York for just over a couple of years.
Okay, just over a couple of years. And then what prompted the move back to London? Was it your relationship or was it work that kind of brought you back here?
It was both, but mainly I was recruited by an American company that had their headquarters in London, and they wanted to bring American educated European people back to London. So I had no other choice. That was where I had to go with work.
Okay, got it. So it's kind of a natural kind of career move for you.
But it was great because in my mind, and I didn't know London at that time, but I thought it's a massive international city. It's exciting. And it's also close to Europe where I'm from. So it made sense.
Absolutely. And then where in London are you and your family based? And you have two boys, right?
I have two boys. Yeah. We are in Notting Hill.
In Notting Hill. Okay. Amazing. And are there things that you love most about London life in particular?
Yeah. You know, in comparison to New York, and I love the New York energy, I feel that London gives you a similar type of energy, but it's a little bit more laid back. The lifestyle, the parks, the buildings are a little bit on the lower side. It's cuter. And yeah. It just feels a bit more laid back,
yeah.
which is good for your day-to-day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm with you. It feels a bit more livable in a sense. New York is so exciting. I lived there in my 20s and it's the best ever. But you're right, you kind of get the best of everything in London. Yeah. Mm. Okay, so we'll kind of get into your career. You've done so much. I guess kind of going back to your time in New York City, you worked in finance, which is like night and day from what you're doing now, which is so fascinating. But what exactly were you doing within the finance world?
I was within a team doing corporate finance, and my day-to-day was to be given a project on a specific company. I go understand the industry, research the industry. So I was doing a lot of research. Then go into the strategy of that business, analyze it, understand it, then go into the numbers. And then what we needed to do is go back to that company and advise them on where they needed to take their strategy to take the business to the next level. And it, even though it's finance sounds like a very technical type of thing, there was a lot of soft information, there was a lot of research, and it was actually quite exciting at the beginning. I got to learn a lot, and I did learn quite a bit that helped me later on when I decided to start my own business.
Absolutely, I can imagine. And kind of one of the things I know that you talk about both in your book and in press was that you were let go from this job in finance. And I feel like we don't talk about those times in our life enough. I know that I've certainly been let go from jobs. And I'm just curious, like, if that had a huge impact on you at the time, whether it was in your life or just in your career.
Yeah. So what happened was when I first got this job, I was really excited. Finance is a very high powered job. You work with a lot of smart people around you. So I was genuinely excited to be in that sector. But then a couple of years into it, all that excitement wore off. And I saw myself secretly reading Vogue and everyone else reading the Financial Times. So I was thinking, this, I don't belong here. Sure. And you know, I wasn't a good employee at the end, and I should see this coming, but I was called into a boardroom one day and I was fired. I should have seen it coming. I didn't. But, you know, I was shocked because I was really young and that was my first big job. And it can be very, it shocked my system. But you know what? That's actually the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me realize that a career in finance wasn't going to be my future. And I had to go back to the drawing board and think, what do I want to do with my life? Where is my passion? And that's when I decided to start my own business.
Totally. And that makes so much sense. Were there any other kind of like key takeaways from that time? I imagine, you know, it's very male dominated. It still very much is. And, you know, my husband works in finance, so I have a little bit of a purview into that world. But yeah, any other, I guess, key takeaways that you learned during that time that maybe prepared you for having your business now?
What I really took away from that is hard work. Everyone in banking, at least at that time, they were working 12, 14-hour days, weekends. And in no way am I endorsing that. And I do have a much more balanced life. But at the early stages when I needed to get my business off the ground, I was working 24/7. And that didn't scare me because I've done this before for someone else. So when it came to growing and getting my business off the ground, I was used to that. And that's a key takeaway.
Yeah, totally. And then was there kind of a key moment when you were deciding, I'm gonna launch Rodeo, this is what I'm gonna do? Was there like kind of a light bulb moment for you?
When I got fired, I just took a step back and I thought, what is it that I love? What is it that I enjoy? And it took me back to my days as a beauty writer. And so what I enjoyed. And I do remember that when I was doing a lot of research in beauty, at the time there was nothing really exciting. There were basic moisturizers and cleansers and the industry was very flat. And I thought there must be something a bit more exciting than this. So I saw a gap in the market for a skincare range that would offer targeted treatments to specific skin concerns with cool ingredients and fun packaging, because skincare can be fun. It doesn't have to be boring. So yeah, that was the concept. And yeah, that's where I came up with the idea.
Okay, perfect. And then when do you think Rodeo kind of really took off? I know you've had some amazing press pushes. Was there a certain moment where you kind of saw things kind of skyrocket for Rodeo?
The first few years were very slow. I wasn't able to get investments, so I had to self-finance the business from some of my savings and worked from a back room at home. And I was doing everything myself. I was a one-woman show, from going to the lab to dealing with production to going to the store selling my product. So I was doing everything myself. Now, it was around year five that I actually managed to hire a couple of people to come and support me. And I remember distinctly, we just moved to our first office and I received a box of samples from our lab. And one of the products, we were going to launch our first facial product, an anti-aging serum. So I took out the bottle, tried the formula. It looked amazing. Anti-aging serum. I thought, oh my God, this is going to be another anti-aging serum. It's not exciting. Looking through the list of ingredients, there was one ingredient that related to viper venom. And I said to my team, why don't we call it snake serum? They said, you must be crazy. You'll take us out of business. So I said, you know, we're doing fine. We're not doing great anyway. May as well take the risk. Sure. So we named the product snake serum. We capitalized on the name, made the product black. We did the shoot with snakes. And that's where it all took off. The product became viral. We started getting our orders, pallets of products from everywhere, from Japan to Germany. And it was the first big risk that I took in the business that actually paid off. And I don't know if we would be around if we didn't launch the snake serum. So it was a pivotal moment.
I was going to say that's such a business. Such a key moment for you
but
guys.
But remember, that was year five.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It was 5 years of hard work and not knowing what's going to happen. So it's kind of hung in there.
Right. And I love what you said about, I guess, you know, the early days being a one woman show. I feel like we see so many, you know, founders and beauty brands now, and we don't really look back to those like key days, what were kind of some of the biggest challenges? Was it being a one-woman show? Was it not having a team?
Yeah, well, it all goes back to lack of funds. So when, let's say, you get investment, you can go and get a beautiful office, go and hire the best people, go and create any products that you want. What I had to deal with is a lack of funds to hire the right staff. I was also very limited with my production run, so I could only afford doing 500 pieces, where a lot of the legitimate factories, they would only do minimum quantities of 5,000 pieces. So I was very limited to what I could do with. I had to work with stock packaging and labels, because again, the minimum quantities for bespoke packaging were 5K and above. So there were a lot of restrictions I had to work with in the first few years. But the good thing is that I just learned to, everything that I invested, it had to have a return. So I never really spent any money without thinking about it. And that made me really tight. And that's why the business became profitable quite early on, as opposed to other companies that get tons of funding and they get, keep on spending it. It puts you in a mindset that I can only survive if I am profitable.
Yeah. No, that's so smart. And again, it sounds like your financial and business background kind of made you have that mentality.
I mean, it was forced because I didn't have any other option. It wasn't like I was swimming in funds and decided not to use them. It was, I had to do with what I had.
Right. Absolutely. So you also have a best-selling book called How to Be an Overnight Success, which I have read. I love it. We'll recommend it for our listeners. But I'm curious, what are some of the main takeaways and tips for success that you really think kind of resonated with most of your readers?
Well, the main thing is, in this day and age of social media and people becoming Insta famous, what I have found out over the last few years is there's a lot of young people out there who want to set up their own business, but they do get disappointed if they don't make it within the first year. And I feel in any business, you will see the results between year 2 and 5. It's very rare that you see any success before that. So the key takeaway from the book is that anyone can be successful, but you just have to give it time. You cannot compare yourself to others because you don't know what their journey is or how long before they became Insta famous, they started working on whatever project. And it's just stay on your lane, be committed, do your work, and you will become successful. And that's why the book is actually, the title's ironic, because you cannot be an overnight success.
Yeah.
It's playing on that word. But anyone can be successful. You just have to be patient.
Absolutely. I was just going to say patience, patience. I love it. It's such a good one. So you also have an amazing social media presence with almost 1 million followers on Instagram. And not just 1 million followers, but they're highly engaged. They're very loyal. You can tell right away when you take a look at your grid. But how do you think that has kind of impacted your business and your success through the years?
I am very different to a lot of other beauty brand founders who tend to be makeup artists or facialists or come from the industry. And what I wanted to do with my platform, since I'm not going to be there posting makeup tutorials, is I wanted to find a way to convey a positive message out there. And I'm a business person. I've started something from scratch, and I felt that the message that I need to communicate, it's encouraging young people and encouraging young entrepreneurs to go and follow their dreams. And that has been the basis of my platform, to inspire, motivate, and just give sort of a day-to-day motivation. I love fashion too, so let's just not forget that.
Yeah, your outfits are fabulous.
It's more of a, it's an escape from work in a way. And the Mrs. Rodial account was never going to be about pushing product. I was very, very clear from the beginning that it's my own personal platform, and I want to feel good about it, but I am not there to push product. So what we've done is created a very engaged community But I have no agenda. I'm not there selling them anything.
Sure.
I also follow a lot of people, and I'm inspired by a lot of other regular people. You know, it's not just about following the most followed blogger or a celebrity. It's about connecting with people, and that's the beauty of social media. So whether, going back to your question, whether the account has helped me grow the brand, I think it has created a certain awareness with people who wouldn't necessarily be that into beauty. Now, has it resulted in sales? I don't know. But it wasn't the purpose anyway.
Sure.
As long as we're all happy, we're having fun, we're motivating each other, I will keep on doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so ironic that you mentioned that community piece, because that's actually how you and I initially connected, was over social media. I think I started following you back when I was living in New York, and I know you were spending time in New York and London and back and forth. And then when I initially came over 2 years ago, I realized that you were shooting a lot here and you were actually based in London. And then I remember I reached out to your team and we've connected and worked together and come to your events now. And it's such a cool way to just connect and meet people. So you've done exactly that through it. Have you kind of always been this hustler, this risk taker? Or is that something that you kind of, I guess, grew into as you found more success in your career?
I can definitely say that I've been taking risks throughout my life. Now, you know, there's days that I feel that I can take over the world and days that I feel that I am this girl who just got fired from banking. So, you know, I think that life is a balance and you are never on top of your game every single day. Mm-hmm. But I feel if you are 60% there on top of your game and you have to deal with the 40% of just feeling a little bit off, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, because it being 100% motivated every single moment of your life, that is not realistic.
Right.
But I feel if you're leaning more on the motivation side, you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that advice. So can you tell us a little bit about your podcast and kind of the premise of it?
Yeah. So after publishing my book, which was 2.5 years ago, I started getting a lot of follow-up questions on Instagram on some of the topics that I didn't cover in the book. And I thought, what is the best way to respond to them? And just responding to a comment on Instagram, it just doesn't go deep enough. So after about 6 months, I put together a bunch of subjects that were not covered in the book. And I thought, let me start a podcast. And it's a different way of communicating. It gives you the opportunity to go deeper into some success issues and other related to success and business issues. And there were a bunch of topics I needed to cover. And after I covered them, I finished season one. So it's almost like a little book.
Yeah.
It goes from chapter to chapter and season one has completed. Yeah. Okay. So that was the background.
Okay.
The
amazing.
Podcast.
And has there been any like one or two guests that kind of stand out in your mind that were really memorable for you for any reason?
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, all of my guests have been amazing. But my favorite ones are my first and my last from the season. The first one is Mario, Makeup by Mario, who he's a very good friend of mine. And I hugely respect him. Not only he's an amazing makeup artist, he's obviously Kim Kardashian's favorite makeup artist, but he created this masterclass franchise, and I have huge respect. And he talks about how he started, and he's very humble, and how he met Kim, and some of the challenges that he has, and how he motivates himself. We have a lot in common. We both wake up at crazy hours, 5 a.m. So that's probably my most listened to episode. And I also love, it's actually, you know, the one, my guest, my last guest, which is the one before the last episode. And it's an episode about energy. And over the last year or so, I've been using energy and getting to understand energy a little bit more to help me to navigate any challenges in my life, change, work with people around me. And I've been very much going into a more of a spiritual path lately. And that last episode with a healer, her name is Ala, it's one of my favorite ones because we talk about clearing energy, how to deal with toxic people, and lots of day-to-day situations and how you can deal and tackle them energetically, which is what I'm into
Absolutely. Okay, cool. That sounds like an amazing episode. So with so much going on in your day-to-day, you have your beauty brands, you have your successful book, your podcast, you're juggling your family life. Do you have any do you find time to relax and turn off, or are you kind of always go, go, go?
Well, going back to what you just said, it doesn't all happen at the same time. So there was a season that it was all about the podcast. Mm-hmm. Then another season, it's all about the book. Then over the last 6 months, work has taken over. So I haven't had a minute to look outside work. So it kind of looks like I'm doing it at the same time. But actually, it's different phases, and I focus on one project or the other. Sure. Now, in terms of taking time off, I do value my weekends. I don't go out at all on the weekend. I like to be close to nature. I like to take long walks. I like to meditate, read books, and really replenish myself any way I can, be with family. I used to work weekends when I started, but I feel I'm on call 24/7 on weekdays, so I don't need to be anymore on weekends. Sure. So weekends are definitely my sacred time, but also during the week, I'm really boring. I'm in bed. Like last night, I was like a baby. I was in bed by 8:30.
I can't even
watch finish a movie. But I do wake up quite early. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to go out every single night. I did that, you know, in my 20s. And it's all about being happy, being balanced, being creative. And you just have to sacrifice a bit of your social life, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you have kind of found a little bit of a balance. So that's great. So kind of talking about rhodiola in a bit more detail. So you founded rhodiola in 1999. What do you kind of think has attributed to what has been, I guess, 20 years of success in the beauty world for you guys?
We always challenge what we have. We've changed packaging about 5 times. We're now in the process of changing our fonts. And when I look at the products, I'm very critical. And I look at them and I think, how can I improve on them? How can we serve our customers better? And it's always that challenging. And it's always making sure that our products are relevant and current and they have a use. I mean, usually every year we have about 50 product ideas at Rhodial and we only launch about 15. And there's times mm-hmm. that a month before the launch, we sit down and we think, are we still excited about this product? And if the answer is no, we pull it. So it's just having that curiosity and having that need to be relevant, be exciting, and everything that you do to have a space and sustainability.
Definitely. You guys are kind of constantly evolving. And I think that's what it's all about. Whether you're on my side of the business or yours, I think that's just so key, is like constantly reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
So there's Rhodiola and then there's Nip and Fab. So for the audience, can you kind of tell us like the main difference, I guess, between the two brands?
Nip and Fab is our millennial brand. So our target market is teens to about late 20s. Rhodiola is more sophisticated. So it's 20s, 30s, 40s. The difference is that Nip and Fab addresses problems and skincare concerns of that younger market. We do have a teen range. We also have the glycolic range that deals with congested skin and pimples and acne and all those issues that you have in your teens and early 20s. So this is the direction with Nip and Fab. Rodiel is more elevated. We use a higher concentration of active ingredients. We also use more active ingredients in every formula. So they do belong to the same group, but they have very, very different approaches to skincare.
Definitely. And what would you say is Rodiel kind of like best known for in the beauty world? Is it makeup or is it skincare or is it like one specific line?
We've launched Rodiel with skincare and makeup is our new-ish baby. Makeup has been around for 7 years now, mm-hmm. believe it or not. If I was going to pick two products that best represent both categories, I would say the Dragon's Blood Sculpting Gel. It's our number one bestseller still, and it's a five-year-old product. Someone gave me the statistics the other day, one per minute worldwide.
Wow.
So that's crazy. It's still our number one. And then on the makeup side of things, our banana powder is flying off the shelves and everyone loves it. Great. So we have a classic there. So yeah, these are the two bestsellers from Rodiel.
Okay, cool. And then for your kind of personal favorites, what are your like diehard, can't leave the house without Rodiel and or Nip and Fab products?
Yeah. I'm very particular with my cleanser just because I feel if you cleanse with the right cleanser, then you don't even need a moisturizer or anything else. Cleanse is important. So I've been using the Pink Diamond Cleansing Balm that comes with a muslin cloth, and I love to put it under hot water, and then it almost gives you an exfoliation with the product and the muslin cloth. It smells like freshly cut roses. It envelops the skin. And the other day, I had lots of makeup on I had to remove, and I put it on. I left it on as a mask. So the Pink Diamond Cleansing Balm, I cannot live without it. And then when it comes to makeup, my go-to product is the Diamond Concealer. Most days when I come to the office, I don't put a lot of makeup on. I would put on the Vitsy SPF 30 moisturizer, and then I would go with the Diamond Concealer, and I put it on strategic places, and that's all I do. And again, that's another product, the Diamond Concealer, that's been flying off the shelves. We've been out of stock, actually. I got paranoid I wouldn't have any more stock, and it just got back. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And your skin is amazing, so I have to ask, is your skincare routine quite elaborate, or do you kind of keep things simple, or kind of what does that look like?
What I like to do is every time we have a new launch, I switch my skincare and I use the latest products. My latest my evening regime is a little bit more elaborate. And now we have this new range that's concentrated drops of high-tech ingredients. And what I've been doing twice a week is I layer the 10% glycolic drops with retinol drops, and that's better than a facial.
Wow.
So I do that twice a week, and I wake up with amazing skin. I also love the Vitsy tonic that has exfoliating properties and lots of vitamin C for giving your skin an even skin tone. And I find, you know, a lot of people want to deal with fine lines and wrinkles, but I think the skin tone is a key thing to make your skin look younger,
yep.
and fresh and give you that glow. And I feel that sometimes we neglect the skin tone, and I think
yes,
the skin tone is important.
Absolutely. Okay, those are such good skin tips. Okay, as a last question, are there any resources like books or podcasts or anything that you love that kind of help keep you motivated or that you find inspiration from?
I'm always searching for the latest thing. I'm a big podcast listener. Actually this morning I woke up and I felt I was a little bit... Yeah, I felt I needed a bit of a creativity boost. So I go and I Google how to be creative. And I came up with a bunch of TED Talks. And that made me think, oh, I need to start listening to TED Talks again. And I listened to a couple of them and I got such great tips. So yeah. I would say TED Talks are amazing. and you can Google any subject that you're interested in and you get a TED Talk for it.
Okay, amazing. I love that tip. Thank you so much. This has been such a fun convo. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Emily.
But before we go, Rodial has been kind enough to offer all our listeners 20% off of everything on Rodial products. And that's at www.rodial.co.uk. Just use the promo code TheBigMove. But Maria, before you go, where can everybody keep up with you, find your podcast, whatever you want to share?
Yeah. So on Instagram, which is my main platform, I am at Mrs. Rodial. I also have a Twitter account with the same name. And I've recently started working a little bit on LinkedIn, which is going to be the next big business platform. My podcast is on the usual podcast platforms, and it's called Overnight Success.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. And we will see you all next time. Bye.